Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone, you go.
Oh no, sorry, I was just going to say it's episode 42 and January 12th. And Pete, how are you feeling?
Mate, I'm so excited to be back.
It's very good to
be back.
Is
this episode 42 or do we go back to one because it's the start of the new year?
Well, I just take it as I was going to compare us to Jesus, and I just might. In the same way, it's 2018 because it's 2018 since the birth, and it's episode 43 since the birth of the podcast, or 42,
okay.
Or whatever
that,
I said.
That sounds fair.
I think it does.
No, very excited to be back. How are you, Nana?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Yeah, I'm good. All right, let's crack into it. We've got a huge show for you guys coming up. We are going to be talking to research fellows Morgan Begg about his legal rights audit and the hit TV show JAG that he's been really rekindling his love for over the break.
Huge fan.
And also Daniel Wilde about two very important developments. We're going to be talking about the alcohol tax that the government has just been lobbied to introduce, more taxes on alcohol, and also the PALJ government's latest sort of inclusion into the GST debate, which is something the IPA has been working very hard on. IPA have been working hard on a lot of things, Pete. So what we thought we should do at the start of the podcast, obviously we've been away for a few weeks.
We
should probably talk about what the IPA has been up to over the break.
I got some texts from the podcast biggest fan, the DILF,
yep,
who said that he was forced to listen to the ABC as a result of us being in hiatus.
Well, I have never felt more ashamed.
Yeah.
And I apologize to DILF.
Yeah, the DILF.
I don't really need to know the backstory of that nickname, but cool. So obviously we've got the legal rights audit. We're going to be talking to Morgan Begg about that later. We've also got Daniel on alcohol tax and GST, but there's been a few others. Pete, do you want to kick us off with one that you've seen?
Okay, yep, so just did Daniel. So How to Win the West Back by Bella De Brera was featured in The Spectator Australia. It was in response to a thing about how Western civilization is bad and shouldn't be taught in history.
Yeah, yeah, and one part from that article I really liked was Professor Catherine Colborne, I think, Head of Humanities at Social Sciences at the University of Newcastle, basically saying that Western civilization is past its use-by date as a concept. So, you know, that's the head of head of humanities at a university.
It's actually a really good piece. Like, Bella's pieces are good.
Yep.
It's a really good piece.
Cool. I also saw Gideon Rosner in The Australian talking about red tape costing us so much money. One stat from that one. So by world standards, Australia's red tape problem is woeful. According to the World Economic Forum, we rank 80th in the world when it comes to the burden of government regulation. Miles behind countries that we should be competing with, such as the US, which was 12th, New Zealand 22nd, Britain 32nd. And basically, we're hanging out around the 80 mark with Kyrgyzstan at 77, Bangladesh at 78, and Iran at 83.
What are we?
So 80.
So we're behind Kyrgyzstan.
We are behind Kyrgyzstan and Bangladesh, and we're just beating Iran.
It's not great.
It's not great. We can do better. Cool.
So Andrew Bushnell in the Herald Sun, public safety must always be the priority about African street gangs and criminal justice.
Yeah, it's obviously a huge issue at the moment in Victoria. The police still deciding whether or not they're going to start saying that African gang violence is a problem. Obviously, some people might have seen that one of our own research staff, not assaulted by an African gang, but sort of assaulted on the street by someone. And it's sort of like talking about how crime problem in Victoria is getting pretty out of hand. And Andrew Bushnell's article talking about how we need to really make sure public safety is a thing. I saw Matthew Lesh in the Daily Telegraph talking about all of the universities that are shutting down freedom of speech. Obviously, we've done a lot of work on that over the last year, so this is a really good recap of sort of what university policies are there out there and and stuff like that. Ones I liked, James Cook University explicitly prevents unintentional offensive language. So not even if you intended to be offensive, you can still be punished.
I am continually unintentionally offensive.
Yes.
It's my thing.
Yeah, yeah. Pete has never been seen without his foot in his mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course. That's Pete.
That is a cheap shot. No.
It's incredibly accurate, as you said yourself not 5 seconds ago.
Daniel Wilde in the Daily Telegraph.
Good edit.
Australia must match Trump to compete on tax. We'll talk about this in a little bit more detail in just a second.
Indeed, we will.
But Daniel Wilde talking about how our workers in America got massive bonuses because their companies were making more money because of less tax that they had to pay.
Mm, those greedy capitalist
bastards. Yeah. Oh, it's Trump giving a handout to his rich mates.
Yeah, yeah. So, speaking of something that came out this morning, which we thought was really interesting. So, yes, if you're following Twitter on the day that the Trump tax cuts were announced, you would have assumed that by now America would be a wasteland where there's just 10 capitalists and then a horde of, like, basically Mad Max.
Indentured
servitude would probably be across the nation, but apparently not. Yahoo, of all places, have published a complete list of all companies that have been giving bonuses or handouts or increasing wages for their staff members in the wake of the tax cuts, and it's sounding pretty good so far. So the latest one, and probably the biggest, is Walmart. Obviously, one huge chain in America of just, you know, I don't know, just
stuff. Just like Kmart.
They sell everything. Yeah,
Kmart and
bigger. Do they?
Yeah.
Probably not in all of them, but I don't think that's where you go to buy your guns. But anyway, Walmart is the latest to credit the lower corporate tax rate, this is coming from Yahoo, as a reason to invest in the saved capital into its workforce. The world's largest private employer, so that's pretty big, on Thursday announced it will increase the starting wage for U.S. employees to $11 an hour. Currently, it was $9 an hour. And Walmart has also given a one-time bonus of up to $1,000 to eligible Walmart employees. I don't know what makes it eligible, but still... As we said, barren wasteland.
I thought it was every single one of their U.S. employees, which was
like $1,000.
Yeah, which is like 200,000 people.
That's a bit of walking around money.
I think that was in the Daniel Wild article, but you might want to check that www.ipa.org.au.
Yep, and all full-time employees will receive 10 weeks of paid maternity leave and 6 weeks of paid parental leave, up from 8 weeks and 2 weeks. So, this was so obvious. If you lower taxes, companies can invest more in their staff and make cheaper goods. And here we have evidence.
What are some of the other companies?
That is a very good question, Pete. Allow me to scroll through this article and just read out names of companies that I recognize. So obviously, AT&T, big company, 1,000 bonuses for 200,000 US employees.
Maybe that's who I was thinking of before.
Yes, American Airlines, another $1,000 bonuses for 127,600 employees.
That's massive amount.
Is that means like everyone got that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Bank of America, $1,000 bonuses for 145,000 US employees. Man, it is a good time to be a US employee, I'll tell you that much. Okay, I'm down at F and I still haven't seen any that I instantly recognize, so I think we might leave this. But basically the picture's there. It's over 80 companies all giving out really cool bonuses to their workers. Again, lower taxes is a good thing. And hopefully Australia can start to lower its corporate tax rate because we are falling well, well, well behind as we were discussing last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. So,
predictions.
Predictions. Yeah, so I thought it'd be pretty cool if first podcast back, we all made predictions and we can, you know, in the last episode of the year, we can sort of just reassess where we were with these predictions. So, mm-hmm. Pete, what do you predict?
Yeah, I'll kick us off. What I predict for this year is that at some point, maybe towards the second half of the year, the Prime Minister of this country, Malcolm Turnbull,
mm-hmm.
will ask for a private audience
yep.
with us three.
Ooh.
Because
us
we,
three.
The Young IPA podcast.
Are we allowed to record it?
I don't think we'll be able to record it.
Oh, no.
But as just to get
it's a huge fish,
just to try and work out which way the wind's blowing.
Yep.
You know, as a trio of thought leaders.
Oh, okay. And this, yeah. Okay.
Just to kind of work out to get our opinion on key issues.
Yeah.
Sometimes by the end of this year, that'll happen.
Yeah, I think Trump will Skype in as well, just to get a flavor as well. I think he'll want to pick our brains for a little bit.
Yep.
Cool. Hopefully, we can lead those into some interviews. My prediction is, I reckon at one point this year, someone is going to write an article saying this proves that Trump colluded with Russia.
Okay.
And it didn't.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
Yeah.
It's pretty bold.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the world's ready to read an article that says this proved Trump colluded with Russia and it didn't turn out, but hopefully. Nini, do you have any predictions for 2018?
Predictions 2018. More members for IPA.
Good.
Because everyone loves us.
Yay. All right. That's a good prediction.
Such a company woman.
And all we need to do is just get one new member for Nina to be proved right.
Yes, please.
Yeah. cool. So that is a good time. I think that's all we need to talk about at the start here. So I think we'll go to...
Does Nate have to do a membership spiel?
That's what I was about to do.
Okay.
So let us do basically this podcast version of an ad read, which is plugging IPA membership. Nina, back from Bali.
Back from Bali.
The volcano couldn't stop Nina from returning to work.
I'm still alive, guys. Sorry.
Nina was the volcano.
I was the volcano.
But you were saying, like, basically you had Bali to yourself because so many people were just, like...
Yeah, because basically people just cancelled their flight.
Yeah.
So, like, it's... Like, I have my own Kuta Beach.
Wow.
Like, there's no one there.
Fantastic.
Was it the same without, you know, 10,000 Aussies in singlets?
Being drunk
and Southern Cross tattoos?
Yeah.
I don't know. I tend to avoid them anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Smart.
Yeah.
Cool.
So. You can't fool us.
So membership, guys.
Yeah, let's do it.
So if you haven't been a member of IPA, please join. We are available 24/7 through ipa.org.au. And there's a join button. And then just click there and then just put in your details. If you loved us, IPA membership will be the great thing for you.
Mm-hmm. How much is this IPA membership, Nina?
It's as start as low as $22.
That is a bargain.
I know. Yeah. For 12 months. And you can meet up all the staff. You can be with us. You will receive everything that we write. What else, Pete?
Events.
Events. I've said that. Cool. Well, basically that.
Mail out, like books and stuff?
Definitely. Yeah. You'll get books, magazines. Of course, Hayes from James Bolt and Pete.
And Morgan.
And Morgan back.
Yeah, Ben and I just high-fived. Cool. Nina, I've got a question for you about membership. I've got a friend whose birthday is coming up. Would IPA membership be a good thing to buy them?
Of course. IPA membership is always the perfect gift for the perfect someone, especially the one that you know will love the freedom of Australia and prosperity.
Cool. On that fantastic note, we will now go to our interviews with Morgan Begg and Daniel Wahb. Okay, we are now joined by Daniel Wahb, Research Fellow at the IPA. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hi, James. Good to be with you.
The Wahb thing.
Yep, that's okay, Pete. So, Dan, obviously, you've been working pretty hard last week. You've got two things we want to talk to you about. So, you've got an article recently about the alcohol tax. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. Basically, there was a proposal by a public health lobby group, the Foundation for Alcohol Research
and Education.
Yep, that's the one. And they were proposing essentially to raise taxes on alcohol. Their main motivation is to obviously deter alcohol consumption in the name of improving public health and health outcomes. And I wrote an op-ed for the Daily Telegraph on why that's not a good idea. Firstly, because Australia is already pretty highly taxed nation, pay a lot of taxes, and about over 40% of a carton of VB is comprised of taxes, so it's already heavily taxed. And secondly,
when Daniel says carton, he means slab, obviously.
Slab.
Yep.
Thanks, Peter.
You're in Victoria now, buddy.
Settle down, mate. We're a national organisation.
That's true.
What they're saying is correct. Like, if you drink a lot of alcohol, then basically you're going to have problems in your life and with your health and cause problems for other people. That's all true. And raising taxes on alcohol will deter some consumption of alcohol. But what they don't take into account is that people aren't like total idiots, so they'll substitute to other types of consumption, whether that's of making their own alcohol or black marketing alcohol or using drugs, mm-hmm. for example. So,
and all of those solutions would be worse than just buying alcohol.
That's exactly right. So any sort of, and this goes for public policy in general, any analysis that doesn't take into account how people actually behave and respond to policy changes is likely to be a bad idea. And this is one of those bad ideas.
Mm-hmm. This strikes me as the kind of issue that would absolutely go off. Gideon Rosner was talking about how when he did the plastic bag thing, he got a lot of feedback from the general public. I don't know, this might be a controversial opinion, but Australian people love froffies.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty standard opinion. Yeah.
Have you received a lot of feedback from punters saying, good on you, mate?
Yeah, a lot of feedback, really. A lot of positive feedback from the article because, it's really going to affect people who are on lower income. So people who do live in areas like Western Sydney, southeastern suburbs of Melbourne, who are going to be most affected by it because it takes a higher share of their income, for example. And it affects everyone as well. It's not just binge drinkers. They say it's just going to affect binge drinkers, but if you have a glass of wine with dinner or a beer at a barbecue, it's going to affect you because the price of all alcohol will go up. So, people are concerned about it. Cost of living pressures are going up across the board. And this is just another example of a proposal for government to make your life even more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. We mentioned it earlier, but I do want to spend some time on this one. So according to figures provided in the Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education's own submission, their proposals would see 47% the slab of beer being taxes. Like, that is an insane number.
You mean carton?
I know what I mean. But 47% is an insane number. And when I talk to people and they're like, oh man, alcohol's so expensive in Australia, you go to Europe, it's so cheap. And it's just like, yeah, because we are taxed so much. Like, there's just not the knowledge in the public that the reason it's so expensive is not because of anything but taxation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's a couple of really important points. The 47% for a slab of beer, you'll see similar things for childcare, for education, for things across the board that they're comprised of taxes, and also regulation. So when you have regulation that obviously increases the cost of producing something, that cost gets passed on through higher prices. So I'd be interested in analysis that looked at the cost of taxes plus the cost of regulation, how much that contributes to a slab of beer.
Mm.
The Barmy Army
good,
have a...
Good by you. Good. You're learning.
The Barmy Army have a song about how expensive beer is in Australia.
Yeah. How does it go?
I sing it. Don't remember. Doesn't... Do you know it, Nina? No. Okay. So, yeah. Not sure. Okay. Get back to you on that.
All right. Good input there, Pete. So, also, yeah. This seems to be like a... We had this discussion a few years ago when the alcopop stacks got brought in. People were thinking, oh, you know, young people are drinking too much in clubs, therefore we're going to raise the cost of alcohol in these clubs. And the problem was that people got really drunk at home, then went to the club already hammered.
Yeah, they did.
And yeah, but like that's when real problems start happening, is when they just get in the door, they're already kind of looking to fight someone. Like,
yeah.
And this seems to be the same sort of thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I think the alcopop tax is a great case study in bad public policy because, I mean, as you say, people aren't stupid. They have preferences and they want to act on them. Now, I mean, you can sort of say whether they're good or bad preferences and you can object to them. But again, when you're designing policy, you need to take into account that people are going to adapt their behavior in certain ways. And it was totally predictable with the alcohol pops tax, what was going to happen. And people would drink at home or substitute to beverages with a higher alcohol volume content and away from the pre-mixed drinks, and that's exactly what happened. And you know, it'll be the same here. If you raise the price of alcohol, people will substitute to other substances, and that'll happen. That's an unavoidable consequence.
And then FARE will come back in and just say the problem is the taxes aren't high enough
That's right.
We need to increase them a bit more.
Exactly. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly. We'll also talk about this other work that you've been doing. So obviously last year we talked to Morgan Berg a lot about his GST report, talking about the GST distribution between states. Now you had a media release yesterday because the Palaszczuk government made an announcement about the GST, and that's a pretty important development. Do you want to tell us what's happened?
Yeah, so the Palaszczuk government made an announcement about income taxes and GST, talking about... So this proposal came up... a couple of years ago when Turnbull was first Prime Minister, about giving states a share of the income tax. And basically that's to address an issue called vertical fiscal imbalance, where the Commonwealth raises more revenue than the states, but the states have more expenditure responsibilities than the Commonwealth. So the states then need to get money off the Commonwealth, and this leads to a whole series of problems. What we think is the best idea is for states to be able to take more control of their revenue base, so to have their own ability to levy their income tax, rather than just being given a share of the income tax by the Commonwealth, which is a better idea than what we have now, but it wouldn't go all the way to addressing the issues. And also fixing the GST system. So Morgan Begg's report is one of the best reports out there in discussing the sort of the fundamental problems with the GST. It basically being that, you know, states don't have incentives to grow their own economy or grow their own revenue base, because if they do that, they get GST taken off them and given to other states.
Yeah.
So what you have is Western Australia basically subsidising South Australia to blow up its coal fire plants, which destroys its revenue base and its economic base, and they end up getting more revenue from prosperous states like Western Australia. So allowing states to levy their own income tax and their own GST is the best way to resolve that issue.
Absolutely.
Is that realistic? Is that something that might happen soon, or is that a kind of a long-term thing for us?
It's something that's certainly achievable. It's a long-term thing because basically the overall climate with the government's budget at the state and Commonwealth level is essentially increasing debt and increasing unsustainability of the way in which governments are providing services, and that's only going to be exacerbated with an ageing population and also essentially lower productivity growth and other economic problems that mean... I mean, they are problems in and of themselves, but in terms of the budget, that means there's going to be less revenue available in the future. So the only way to fix this problem is by fixing the structure of the Federation. So as things get worse, the case for reform and the case for substantial reform will grow. So I'm pretty optimistic, and I believe that, you know, these types of changes will be forthcoming. There's already a lot of academic... It's already like a generally accepted idea that it's good for states to be able to control their revenue base and to be able to... you know, governments that are closer to the people typically deliver better results because they're more accountable. These are already generally accepted principles. The problem is really the political climate. But as things get worse, I think the ideas will be, you know, get broader support.
Yep. Yeah, and on their political climate, so obviously you're saying like Western Australia is basically in a position right now where they're subsidising South Australia,
yep.
But the Western Australian government's submission to this inquiry was just like, yeah, the current system's working pretty well. And it's like, well, wait, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do want some change, obviously, mostly to take into account their resources and to take into account, you know, money you get from resources to figure that into the composition. But yeah, I mean, it's tough to get all the states in the Commonwealth to agree on anything, let alone such a big reform. But because the way in which the Commonwealth has got more power over the years has been because states have voluntarily given it up. So theoretically, one state can bring a lot of the system down as it currently stands. If they refuse to participate in certain things, they can withhold their payments and things like this. So if there is a particular state that gets bolshy about it, then that can sort of be an impetus for reform as well.
Cool. Let's get Daniel Wilde into state parliament.
Yeah. I think, don't we want to keep him here?
Oh, like eventually. Not, yeah, eventually.
Not today. Yeah. Cool. So, Dan, earlier in the show, Pete and I shared our predictions for 2018, things we think are going to happen either in Australia or around the world. Do you have any big predictions? Sorry to spring this one on you, but anything you're sort of thinking about is going to be a big issue this year?
I think it's going to be a great year because I think the issues that we face are becoming more and more sort of prevalent each day. I think, you know, with publications like you guys do with Hay every week, sort of outlining the issues, whether it's on college campuses or freedom of speech or the growing unsustainability of government budgets and the economic problems we have, I think more people than ever before are becoming aware that we need to sort of have fundamental structural solutions to these problems, and this sort of meandering through on a day-by-day basis, you know, is not going to cut it anymore. So I'm pretty confident that things on freedom of speech will improve. Section 18C will have to be revisited, and I think that will be repealed. It's only a matter of time, and it's only going to take, you know, another case, such as the QUT case, for 18C to be repealed, and there's already broad public support for things like that. And things like tax cuts and reforming the government's budget is high on the political agenda. So I think it's going to be a good year and a pretty good year for freedom and prosperity.
I got one last thing I want to ask you about. So one of the developments that happened late last year was that Dan joined Pete's cricket team. I want to get an assessment from Dan and then Pete of how Dan is performing so far.
Okay.
Oh, Dan's performing well. Deep Denny is a great cricket club. It's doing very well this year in the threes. So scored a few runs, a couple of good knocks, took my first wicket of my career.
Yeah.
Just saying he was on 96.
Ooh.
And
robbed him.
Smacking around our big fast bowlers, and I bowled probably an absolutely perfect ball. It was going at about 80 kilometers an hour. It pitched halfway down the wicket and he went for a massive swing and it got caught behind.
So it's
just textbook bowling.
Got
really.
The danger man.
Yeah.
Textbook bowling. I only got one over. The skip wouldn't put me back in, obviously, just to give my arm a bit of a rest.
Yeah.
Let you rest your back from cricket.
Rest the back, get a bit of physio work done on the shoulders.
Yeah.
Cool. No, it's good. Going really well. Great season.
And Pete, how would you feel?
Oh, mate, they love him down there.
Yeah?
Call him the Wild Thang.
That's where that was.
Yeah. No, they love him. He's been great. It's been huge.
All right. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks. It's been my pleasure.
See you, mate.
Okay, we are now joined for the first time this year by Morgan Begg, research fellow here at the IPA, and it took a little time to get the interview together because Morgan got another call from a scammer.
Yeah, it is a bloody outrage if I can say that on this family-friendly program.
Yeah, you can. Go ahead. You did.
This is actually a bit of a misnomer because the reason you get so many calls, Morgan, and I sit next to Morgan here at the IPA, is that he's implacably polite to every telemarketer.
Impeccably?
No, implacably.
Oh, okay.
Is that what I meant?
Impeccably, yes.
Yeah. No.
Yeah?
Okay, move on. That's
it's been a bumpy opening. We've had a few weeks off. Morgan, how was your break? Sick as a dog.
Yeah, sick as a dog. Had pneumonia.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that later because I do have some questions to ask about that. But Morgan, obviously over the break, there was something very important that the IPA did that you've authored, came out, made the Age editorial, the legal rights audit. So do you want to talk to us about what this report is? I know we've done it a few times in the past.
Yeah, so this is based off original research we first conducted in 2014, Simon Breeny and myself, where we audit all federal laws that are currently in force for breaches of these fundamental legal rights, which are necessary to make the justice system achieve justice.
So what are these four legal rights that you've identified?
So the four that we've identified for our audits are the presumption of innocence, or laws that reverse presumptions against the accused parties. The principles of natural justice, which is about, you know, the right to a fair trial, procedural fairness, that sort of thing. The right to silence, so the right of a person not to be forced to give information to authorities. And the fourth one, which is connected, the privilege against self-incrimination. So the privilege not to be forced to give information that might incriminate yourself.
All good stuff, all good stuff. And what was the outcome of the audit?
So in 2014, we found that there were 262 provisions that breached these rights. And as of the end of 2017, that number is now 324.
And both numbers are higher than zero.
That's a problem. Which is what we want.
Yeah. I'm no mathematician.
So why are these four legal rights so important? Like, what is like the philosophical reason we need a burden of proof, that we need natural justice, right to silence, and privilege against self-incrimination?
So it's these principles, which are, you know, fundamental parts of the common law dating back centuries, are necessary to restrain the power of the state. Whenever it keeps the state in check and holds back tyranny, essentially. So this is fundamental to the freedoms of all individuals against the state, which oversteps the mark.
Absolutely. And so we've got 307 breaches at the... 324 breaches at the end of 2017 of these legal rights in our laws. What are some of the examples of laws that would affect people that have these written into it, which is a problem?
So the vast majority of these breaches tend to occur in business, trade, finance, in these sorts of industries. Taxation is a huge one. But you also find that there's many of these breaches also in, say, the Fair Work Act and those sort of employment regulations, and also in a significant amount of discrimination law. So you find that... there are quite a few provisions that reverse the presumptions against people accused of discriminatory conduct in both employment law and other discrimination law. So that has quite a broad application.
Is a lot of this stuff what they refer to in the US as regulatory dark matter, where the regulatory agency kind of gets this power and the minister just writes in powers for them and there's not much oversight and they end up having stuff like this on their books? Would that be a good way of putting it?
Another way of describing it would be that these are laws that are passed by Parliament, but they deliberately give these coercive powers to administrative agencies and regulatory agencies, which have less accountability.
So, Morgan, I don't know if you're a big fan of Black Mirror, but I was watching it over the break. Oh, you are a big fan?
No, this is good.
Not a big fan of technology.
No. So
based on one episode I watched at your recommendation,
yep.
I think the comparisons to Twilight Zone are very unfounded and unfair to Twilight Zone.
I am going somewhere with this, but we can talk about the merits of Black Mirror as a TV show. But I was actually thinking about your legal rights audit as I was watching this one episode, because it's this future where insurance agents have access to people's memories so they can remember what happened when someone makes an insurance claim.
Yeah.
And there's all this thing of like, oh, you have to tell the insurance agent, you have to allow the insurance agent into your memory, even if you're a bystander. And I was thinking I was sitting on the couch with my friends just going like, this will never happen. Like, we will never get to a point where we have to tell insurance agents about what's happening in our memories and stuff. But it's like there's 324 breaches of legal rights in the law. I mean, like
clearly the precedent has been set.
It's not actually the most stretched out narrative for Black Mirror to go down. So you don't even like Black Mirror?
It's interesting. I was disappointed by the one episode I watched.
Which one was that?
So it's from the most recent season, the Star Trek one.
Oh, you're wrong.
Just describe it for the viewers that might not know what you're talking
about. So Black Mirror is like this anthology series that sort of like imagines technology in the future and the effects it's going to have on society.
Completely dystopian.
Mm-hmm. And Morgan Beg is completely wrong that the first episode of season 4 was bad. It was awesome. So it's like a guy sets up a video game where, like, and you know how there's like virtual reality right now, and it's, you know, you can immerse yourself into a video game, you can walk around in it, in this universe. So this is sort of imagining a world where you can start to control that universe that you imagine, and you can start to add, you know, maybe people you don't like into the universe. And then it's like a little creepy, because what if someone had uploaded a version of yourself to a game of their controlling and started being able to control you? Like, that's a little weird, and I don't quite know. Yeah. And it's like...
The gist of the episode,
I guess. I don't like it because of the dystopian technology thing.
Yeah. But that's an interesting one, in that that's where virtual reality is going.
The wheel's great.
The wheel is great. But that's where virtual reality is going, and I don't quite know how to stop that happening. Like, what's the policy one? If you know what I mean. Like, so say...
Is this in the audit?
No, well, I'm just asking. So while we're on Black Mirror, it's like, how do we stop a video game company being able to make a game where someone could put someone in their lives into the game and start torturing them? I don't know how. Yeah,
well, you already can.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah, but how do you stop it?
I mean, at the end of the day, all these things in video games, no matter how advanced they seem, are all zeros and ones.
Yeah.
So I didn't. Maybe this is callous, but I didn't really care about the characters that episode, because at the end, like, they're just digital creations.
Right.
They're not. They don't have souls or anything.
Yeah. You know? Well, some of them do. Some of them are real people. But yes, I can see your point.
Yeah.
Now, Morgan, as we discussed earlier, you were very sick over the break.
Yes.
Sick in the head.
Sick in the head. But also sick with possibly pneumonia.
Yeah. It was confirmed. Yeah.
Yeah. It was confirmed pneumonia.
Yeah. Okay. By a medical professional.
At least one.
Morgan fell sick in the end of the First World War. So I would do want to ask this. So you were saying at our staff meeting that one of the highlights of your holiday was discovering that there's a double serving of Jag at 2 in the morning on 1H. Yeah,
Channel 11, I think.
How did you stumble across this?
It was another sleepless night. It might have been Christmas or Boxing Day or something
just,
like that.
Just pondering in the universe.
I was just laying in bed and I thought, I've had enough of this. I'm checking out of bed.
Yeah, go on.
And then, you know, just flicking around TV, and wall to wall, every channel is just infomercials, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then out of nowhere,
the Oasis.
A diamond in the rough, and it was Jag.
Yeah, so for our listeners who don't know what Jag is, and considering we're the young IPA podcast, I'd assume most don't know what Jag is.
That is outrageous. But yes. I'll pretend.
What is Jag?
So Jag is a program that aired between, the mid-90s. For about 10 or 11 years. It's about US Navy lawyers who investigate and litigate crimes that fall under the Navy's jurisdiction. Mm. Fantastic. Absolutely. It checks all of my boxes.
This forms the basis of one of your childhood ambitions, doesn't it, Morgan?
Oh, I wanted, yeah, exactly right. So as long as I can remember, I wanted to join the Navy.
Yeah.
As a Navy lawyer or just as a Navy?
It was... probably a Navy lawyer. Mm. That's just based off Jag. When I was a kid, I wanted to be in that show.
So when the teacher was like, "What are your dreams to the class?" It was like, you know, rock star, athlete, Navy lawyer.
Yeah, Harm Rap Junior.
Jag.
And what was it like being that popular at high school?
I was best friends with the most popular.
Oh, okay.
Kid in school.
So you formed a helpful coalition.
I was very helpful.
Yeah, you're like,
otherwise I would have struggled.
You're like one of those.
That's why I asked to sit next to me.
So you're basically one of those like mollusks that attach themselves to the big fish as they swim around. Technically, you're part of it.
Yeah.
So what did they do in Jag? Like, I never I knew about it, but I never really quite watched it. The world of the Navy lawyer, not being one I could really identify with. So what were the cases that came up? Because I know, like, NCIS, there's just a lot of murders that happen in the Navy that we have to believe, like, so many murders.
Every week, multiple. It's quite extraordinary.
I really need to, have an interior, look at it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a deeper problem in the NCIS universe that goes beyond the sort of week-to-week criminal investigation.
And I don't think these detectives are up to discussing.
Well, there's only four of them.
Yeah.
And they're like...
You think with a problem of weekly, we'd have a few more officers on site.
They need an entire... they need hundreds of people
to
figure this out. It's like... have you ever seen Midsummer Murders?
Again, I know about it.
It's like set in a sleepy English country town.
Yeah,
and there's like 4 murders a week, and they've got like 2 detectives that are dealing with this every week. They're those detectives that like they have terrible marriages and they have alcoholism.
Yeah,
those
end up becoming crooked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that's the end point of those sort of shows.
And it's also the end point of this interview. We started at audit. We ended at the demographics of the town in Midsummer Murders.
Well-resourced police is what Morgan's getting at.
Yeah, yes. Okay, cool. Morgan, thank you so much for joining us.
You can bring Andrew on to talk about criminal justice reform and saving money from prisons.
And we'll just grill him on Midsummer Murders. Thank you, Morgan.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, thank you to Morgan and Daniel for those interviews. We'll now go to some stories that made us laugh over the break.
Yeah.
I want to start with this one. So, obviously, Fire and Fury, I believe the book's called, by Michael Wolff.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of research. He's been talking to a lot of people, sort of getting an idea of like what Trump's like as a president. I say a lot of research sort of wincingly because it doesn't seem to be the most fleshed out kind of research about it.
Finally something about Trump.
Yeah, exactly. The world was crying out for like what's it like inside the Trump administration.
It's the discussion we needed to have.
Yeah. Oh. So this guy's talking to a lot of aides, a lot of people around the White House. Basically just getting all the juicy gossip that people are going for. And, a lot of excerpts are making its way to Twitter. A lot of journalists going like, can't believe this is how the administration's going. Oh. This one was tweeted. And just let me, like, Nina doesn't really know about this story. So, Nina, just give me a heads up when you think something's slightly amiss with this story.
Okay.
Cool. This is a screenshot. On his first night in the White House, President Trump complained that the TV in his bedroom was broken because it didn't have the Gorilla Channel. Trump seemed to be under the impression that a TV channel existed that screened nothing but gorilla-based content 24 hours a day. To appease Trump, White House staff compiled a number of gorilla documentaries into a makeshift gorilla channel, broadcast into Trump's bedroom of a hastily constructed transmission tower on the South Lawn. However, Trump was unhappy with the channel they created, moaning that it was, quote, boring because, quote, the gorillas aren't fighting. Anything jumping out at people right now? Staff edited out the parts of the other documentaries where the gorillas weren't hitting each other and at last the president was satisfied. Quote, on some days he'll watch the Gorilla Channel for 17 hours straight, end quote, an insider told me. Quote, he kneels in front of the screen of the TV with his face about 4 inches from the screen and says encouraging things to the gorilla, like, I like the way you hit that other gorilla, it was good. I think he thinks the gorillas can hear them. So obviously this is a setup.
Yeah,
it's a really funny spoof, but it's a spoof.
Yep.
Yeah. Obviously, that's like,
it's quite
funny. Yeah, it's a really funny thing. I like the idea that I like the way you hit that other gorilla. It's very funny to me. But we could all just go like, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Some journalists ran with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They really, really got into it. So we had like NBC journalists, CNN journalists going like, I can't believe the Gorilla Channel is a real thing. And then the Twitter Pixelated Boat, this guy based in Melbourne, he's pretty funny, just going like, maybe I'm part of the problem as well.
Yep.
Like I'm exposing how journalists are so blinded by hatred, they'll just run with the Gorilla Channel. I did like this one. So Scott Dworkin, an MSNBC contributor, retweeted it and was thinking like, oh my God, can't believe it.
Suck it.
Yeah, he later deleted that. And in a follow-up tweet, he said he wasn't fooled. Check out this.
You deleted it, then you said you weren't fooled.
Yeah, I wasn't fooled. But check out this. I didn't get fooled into tweeting this and deleting it. I didn't put satire at the end, and then so I deleted, then didn't repost. Oh, sorry, I didn't put satire at the end, so I deleted, then didn't repost. If you think that's news, I feel sorry for you. The saddest part is this could be true, because Trump is insane, probably more so. Still hilarious. Like... Mate, just cop it.
Mate.
Yeah, just cop it on the chin.
Yeah, you like, just stop. You just dig up.
You stuffed up.
Yeah.
You let your emotions get the better of you because you think you just need to rock it.
I think we need to start a list of this stuff.
Yeah. People falling for fake
news.
Well,
not people falling for fake news, just like crazy Trump stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The gorilla.
We could do the fake news.
I would watch a gorilla channel.
Yeah,
if there was gorillas fighting for like 24/7, you tell me you're not watching.
But gorillas is like peaceful animal.
Yeah, but like, come on,
don't hit me with your facts, Nina.
You've never seen a gorilla throw a punch.
No, I've never seen
it. Yeah, I'm in the wild.
I've got something else. Not Gorilla Channel.
Okay, I'll watch a Gorilla Channel.
Well, we're done with that.
Yeah, I'm done with that.
Okay, so the big news here in Australia this week, apparently a group of cricketers got drunk after winning the Ashes. So this was a bit of a thing for
for the, what would we call them? Like the public health authorities.
I'd just say wowsers in general.
Yeah, wowsers. So
professionally offended.
Confected outrage.
Yep.
So the Aussies won the Ashes, as you people would know, and they were
4-0.
4-0. They went out to celebrate afterwards at the Coogee Pavilion, which is one of Sydney's eastern suburbs' fashionable night spots. Mm-hmm. And Sean Marsh and Jackson Bird were captioned smoking during the celebrations. This raised the ire of a whole number of professional health people. Dr. Michael Gannon, the president of the Australian Medical Association, said they role modelled elite level they looked up to boys and girls and men and women across Australia, and they expect a certain level of behaviour. Maurice Swanson, the president of the Australian Council on Smoking and Health, was shocked. There's heaps more. I'm not going to read through them all. Sarah White from Quit Victoria said, it was really poor judgment, blah, blah, blah. He said they were secretly filmed.
Yeah.
It's not like they were on TV. Yeah, random from across the pub was surreptitiously filming them. So,
just doing an ad read for Benson and Hedges. I just don't know if Australia is ready for a cricket player that smokes. I don't know if we're ready to accept one of them. Look, I grew up on, moral character of Shane Warne.
Yeah.
And, I don't know about these new guys that dart up at whenever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, beer drinking, dart smoking legend that is Shane Warne. Obviously not morally, but great cricketer. Like, Doug Walters.
Yeah.
They used to drink beers on the boundary line sometimes, down in front of both of them. Anyway.
And I reckon if a child saw that photo, I reckon it's up to the parents to just go like, oh, by the way, don't do that. That's
smoking's
pretty
bad for you.
Yeah.
Even though Jackson Bird only got one test and didn't bowl well anyway. So
yeah, so, well, it's correlation.
It's probably.
It's like when everyone started reassessing vegetarianism after Peter Siddle's form went off the deep end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But my favourite thing from the Daily Telegraph report that I was just reading from was Steve Smith, obviously the Australian captain, was the first to arrive at the venue around 12 p.m. and was the last to leave around 10 hours later.
Just
and
a leader.
That is leadership.
It's leadership.
That's why he's the skipper.
Cool. I've got one here. So obviously Golden Globes happened recently. A lot of people wearing black to sort of just make a brave statement against sexual violence and sexual harassment. I didn't watch it. You couldn't pay me to watch the Golden Globes. But, a lot of speeches talking about how Hollywood's going to finally start standing up for the victims of sexual assault, which is probably like 20 years too late. But
why didn't you do it when you found out about it?
Yeah, that would be my question.
Why didn't you do it when you knew your boss was raping people?
Yeah, exactly. So one of the big takeaways from this event was Oprah accepting an award. Gave this big speech about how now's the turning of the tide, and obviously it's like now a lot of like, oh, Oprah for president kind of things. And, she's starting to wheel out a few people. It's like a friend of Oprah said she's considering running for 2020.
Yeah.
I so hope she does.
Yeah.
Not because I want to see her as president, but, I don't know how she'd do, but I do want to see like a time lapse of people when Trump ran going like, you cannot have a reality TV show host run for president, and then them going, Oprah guys, she's got it.
Yeah.
I really want to see that. And another big thing from this story was NBC, obviously the big television channel in America. A tweet from their official Twitter account, nothing but respect for our future president, hashtag Golden Globes, with a picture of Oprah.
Yeah.
Obviously playing on that Trump meme from a while back, nothing but respect for my president. But it's a little, first off, showing your bias, saying like NBC is now actually campaigning for Oprah. And the second part is NBC wouldn't run the Ronan Farrow investigation into Harvey Weinstein event, when it was like when he had the scoop and he's trying to find somewhere that published it. NBC said no.
Yeah. Okay.
And then NBC also had Matt Lauer as the host of the Today Show for a while, who's like one of the worst offenders.
It's yeah.
Like, I get we need to do PR blitz. Yeah. We need to come to the other direction, but geez, calm it down.
Yeah, no, they're terrible.
Yeah, just know your history.
Can I ask you a couple of questions? What is Oprah's politics?
Well, I don't know too much about it. I know she was a big Obama backer,
mm-hmm.
But I did also see that she's not a fan of the death tax. So in America, before you can hand out your estate to family members after you die, you pay a tax to the government, which is your death. And I think the quote, I can't remember off the top of my head, but the quote was something to the effect of, I don't like the idea of a death tax. I already gave 50% of my money when I was alive. I don't want to give more when I'm dead. So
maybe she's rock solid.
Yeah, hopefully. If Oprah runs big on tax reform. I mean,
go for it. My thing with like Oprah,
yeah.
You've got a great gig, you make $1 million. Don't be president. I mean, the hours.
Yeah.
The hours being president's got to kill. It's got to be a killer.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Burr had this bit about Trump when he was just like, I don't know if Trump wants to be president because there's so many times when you're president and all you want to do is just go and watch the game and put your feet up. And they're like, sorry, sir, the world's best cellist is in the foyer to give you a private showing. You're going to go, oh, God, I got to care about this for 5 minutes.
So that's what I'd be asking you to think about our lifestyle choices.
Yes. Now, shall we move on? We've got a fair few here.
Yeah, I'll go. So Jacinta Price, a Indigenous councillor in Alice Springs, has announced that she thinks that Australia Day shouldn't be moved, and that she said they're never actually satisfied with what Australia does. So of people who want Australia Day to be moved, they're never actually satisfied with what Australia does to try and appease them. None of white Australia who are around now are responsible for what happened then. She called the Triple J decision to move Australia Day idiotic. She said, quote, "It's stupid. It was done inconsiderately. Knee-jerk reactions don't work. They've now moved Australia Day to the countdown to the International Holocaust Remembrance Day. We've got to stop painting each other with the same brush. Not all white people are racist, and not all Aboriginal people are feeling like they're victims of our country's history." So Jacinta, of course, an Indigenous councillor. So I guess, you know, you can have your discussion about when Australia Day should be, but you can't actually say that all Indigenous people want Australia Day to be moved, because that's not true.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. So, yeah, where can people read that article?
Because I haven't read that yet. Really, Yahoo 7 News, that was on.
Huge.
Just Google Jacinta Price.
Second shout out to Yahoo, this podcast.
Do you know what? Yeah. It was really snarky.
Right.
It wasn't like, here's this person making a statement. It was like, oh, this contentious position.
Yeah.
It's like, why is it contentious?
Yeah, actually,
because she's Indigenous.
Now that you bring this up, the Yahoo one about the companies doing tax, companies embracing tax cuts was also pretty snarky.
Yeah, you could tell the journo hated it.
Yeah. Lift your game, Yahoo.
Yeah. Let's get.
I've gone from pro Yahoo to anti Yahoo about 15 seconds.
Yahoo, no longer a friend of the podcast.
Oh, massive. All right. So, this next story we're going to talk about comes from a very good friend of the podcast in The Guardian. Now,
Guardian football is excellent.
Okay, fine. But this is actually pretty funny. So, Emmanuel Macron, obviously, Prime Minister of France, we talked about him a lot last year.
You normally pronounce it more
sophisticated.
Do it again.
You knew me.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to make myself worse.
Emmanuel Macron.
here we go. Look at that. Nina's lost it.
Okay, fine, whatever. Concentrate. This is actually terrifying, but also kind of funny. Macron, or whatever you want to pronounce it, wants to destroy fake news. In a New Year's speech to journalists at the Elysee Palace, by the way, a quick sidebar here, if you're ever a French government and you want to make a law that's like slightly tyrannical, make sure you do it at a palace.
Yeah.
It's played really well for the French people in the past. So under the new law, websites would have to say who was financing them, and the amount of money for sponsored content would be capped. For fake news published during election seasons, an emergency legal action could allow authorities to remove their content or even block the website. Macron added, "If we want to protect liberal democracies, we must be strong and have clear rules." He edited out the part of the quote where he's like, "We have clear rules about what people can think."
Yeah. I can't believe no one's ever tried this before.
Yeah, it seems like it's there for the taking.
Such a good idea.
It says France media watchdog, the CSA, would be empowered to fight against, quote, any attempt at destabilization, end quote, by TV stations controlled or influenced by foreign states. I wonder if Macron's idea of fake news would be linked to things that are critical of him.
Yeah. He's such a centrist. He's such a moderate centrist.
Hey, guys, he's the only centrist leader we've ever had. This is also coming off, after this, in Brazil, also going to be cracking down on fake news, which is even more terrifying because that's a much less liberal government. In the next few days, this is coming from The Intercept, quote, "In the next few days, the federal police will begin activities in Brasilia by a specifically formed group to combat false news during the upcoming presidential election process. Measures are intended to identify and punish the authors of fake news for or against candidates." So, very terrifying.
Yeah. All right. So my last one for this week is this. Okay, so there's a certain subset of grievance politics, which I call right-wing grievance politics. So most grievance politics is left-wing, but there is a subset of grievance politics called right-wing. What did I just call it?
Grievance politics.
Just did the same thing twice in a row.
Yep. Forgot it the second
time. This is a really good example of it. Indiana Senator, State Representative Milo Smith left the Indianapolis Colts game on September 24th.
NFL football team.
And he felt triggered because they were doing that anthem protest thing where some of the players kneeled down during the anthem, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, to protest police violence against black people.
Exactly right. So he said, he's introduced a bill to enable patrons who are offended by that protest to get their money back from the NFL. And he said, "To me, when they take a knee during the national anthem, it's not respecting the national anthem or our country. I'm pretty patriotic, and it didn't sit right with me." Well, if it didn't sit right with you, mate, let's just ban it.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously this has been a huge issue. Like, people would have heard about the kneeling protests in the NFL.
Yeah.
Became very big in Indianapolis after Mike Pence visited the game and then was shocked somehow that players protested and then immediately left. And yeah, so this is just like, people don't like protests. My approval numbers are low. So to hell with the constitution and the way our government's set up, where I'm just going to say we should ban this.
Yeah, you're not doing it right, Milo.
Yeah, exactly. The only Milo in the world not doing things right.
Why is your name Milo?
Yeah, well, who knows?
Is Milo short for something?
Yeah, I don't, well, Miles. Certainly not for Yiannopoulos. But anyway, cool. That is it for the show this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. So glad to be back in the saddle.
Yeah.
So glad to be back making the podcast. We should do another ad read for membership, just as people have listened to the podcast.
Nina, wake up.
Blown away.
I'm awake.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you? Nina, where can people go to become members of the IPA?
To become a member, just visit our website, ipa.org.au, and just click on that join button. If you're already a member, you can still renew your membership. Just click on that membership button. If you want to share the love of IPA with the people around you, just go click on that join button and give IPA membership as a present.
Mm-hmm. How much is membership?
Start as low as $22.
That is still a bargain.
Absolute steal.
I've thought about it for 30 minutes. Still a bargain.
Still a bargain.
Cool. All right, cool. Thank you guys so much. Make sure you guys are subscribed on iTunes, SoundCloud, and our website. You can go to all those places. You can also make sure you're telling your people, telling your friends about it. The number of listeners. Sorry, fell apart there. I've got 1 hour of good content in me and then it falls off. So number of listeners really spiked up towards the end of last year. So people are really sharing it around. Great to see.
Thank you very much.
Sending it to people. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes as well. Helps us out with the ranking. So thank you guys so much. See you next week.
Stay up.
Yeah.